Hey Wargamers, welcome back to the channel, Death From Above Wargaming. I'm Aaron, and I'm here with Tom and Dave on this wonderful Sunday morning. We got a great topic. This one, probably not very controversial. We're going to be talking about running your own tournament. So not only is Dave a 3D printing extraordinaire, but Dave also runs a lot of local tournaments in the Harrisburg area. I think we might have mentioned that before. We're going to focus today on tournaments, right? And not so much like Classic versus Alpha Strike. We might touch on that. It might happen. Don't hold me accountable if we do. But primarily, we're going to be talking about structuring them, what makes them good, what makes them bad, and some things for you guys to think about if you want to run your own tournament. Now, that said, you know, when I think of tournament, like the first thing that comes to my mind are like massive gaming halls, you know, tables and tables of you know, various war games and, you know, all, you know, ladder and all this other stuff, brackets. But it doesn't have to be like that, right? It could just be five of your buddies at the local gaming store, you know, playing through a series of battles that, you know, that culminate in a final championship round or something along those lines. So why don't we start there? And Dave, you know, we'll start with you since you are probably the resident expert in these things. But let's talk about, you know, what, from a general structure perspective, you know, what makes a tournament, you know, quote unquote, good? Like in thinking about the number of people and, you know, how to kind of structure it, points or scenarios or whatever. Like, give us a couple things, couple top things that come to your mind. And then, Tom, you can kind of reflect on that.
Sure. So the number one thing when it comes to having a tournament be quote unquote successful is organization. Getting your people registered, knowing what they're going to play, setting your restrictions on, you know, eras or availabilities, getting your folks to send you lists if you're super concerned with legality. But all of that ultimately really just culminates into your job as a TO is to make sure that your players have fun. Okay. It's not, you're not there to make money. You're not there to, you know, score points or win, or, you know, provide people with cred or bragging rights. Like you're there to provide a venue for your five buddies or your 15 buddies or however many people you have a great day or 2 days of wargaming, if that's what you're into.
So, Tom, you know, in terms of tournaments, right? And I know you're not like a tournament bro, but, you know, if you're going to play in a tournament, what are things that would attract you as a, and I think your perspective is good because, again, you're not somebody that's like, quote unquote, in the scene. What would be the types of things that would attract you to a tournament?
Like Dave was saying, I think organization, like level of, one of the things when I poke around looking at other tournaments is sometimes they're like indecipherable. The schedules are not readily apparent. The rules that you're supposed to follow aren't necessarily easy to get to. It's really organization, I think.
Yeah. You know, the other piece of this is I want like a fair and balanced chance at winning the pot. I want to see well thought out missions that aren't like silly, right? And are clearly just luck of the draw. There's nothing I hate more than going to a tournament and having it be like, well, you know, it's random this and random that. And I think we talked about this in our last one, our last jump point. We were talking about missions and how narrative missions could be so cool with like randomized deployments and all of these other things. Like if you have that, like if it's so random, right? Like the tournament's not fun. Like that's not fun. Like I'll do random in a narrative game, and maybe instead of a tournament, you run a big narrative thing. That's cool. But for a tournament, for me, like I want in-game structure, right? I want that organization structure outside, but I also want like I want to understand the missions. I want to understand like these are symmetrical. These are the objectives. This is I want to be able to plan my force around. Like if I get this mission, this is how I'm going to play. Right? Mm-hmm. That's the kind of stuff that really excites me as a player. Is almost that pregame strategy so that when the boots hit the proverbial neoprene, as it were, you know, you're ready to go, right? You kind of have some sort of formulated plan to play the game. I think I've seen some tournaments where they do that very well, and I've seen other tournaments where it's almost like it should be a narrative thing, but it's not. You know, it's intended right. to be competitive, and I don't know how that ever shakes out. So that's my two cents on it.
Yeah, and there's certainly value in what you're saying there. You know, it takes a good amount of effort to design mission goals that both sides can accomplish.
Right.
I mean, you're keeping things symmetrical, which unfortunately leads some of the scenarios to be a little simpler than what you could pull off in a narrative, which is okay. But the scenarios right. have to be straightforward enough that they are well understood with minimal questions, because as a TO, you don't want to be bouncing from table to table to table answering a question on, well, how do I deploy? Like, right. write your scenarios well. If you want to mix it up, I've done things where each round or each scenario has specific VP bonuses. Like if you manage to DFA someone in the middle of this tournament, you get a couple extra victory points. I also found a lot of success in taking, and I actually wrote my own randomized planetary conditions table. So each player rolls a dice at the beginning of a scenario. You add those numbers together. It corresponds to a chart, and you know, it's bell curved to the center being nothing, like just right. the standard game.
It's clear skies.
Exactly.
I don't believe that. I assume it's 10 cells.
Clear skies.
No. It's 10 cells. 9 of them are sandstorm. So. And then one of them is clear skies.
Right.
But I have, sorry, guys. You just bad rolls.
Bad right. roll.
But like double ones and double sixes, both players get 2 minefields that they can throw down on the table before deployment.
Cool.
That's like cool. Anything from nothing to things that completely change how you play that game, but it's yeah. not, none of them are so game breaking that it would cripple that, you know, both players suffer the effect. Yeah. So it's something that you can't plan for when you're list building, but it's something that you do have to keep in mind and stay kind of on your toes to manage that adversity, I guess.
Yeah. I like that. And I like when effects are evenly applied to both players. The other thing you sort of sparked the thought is, you know, making missions that are achievable regardless of force construction, right? That was the idea that popped in my head. We did talk about that a couple weeks ago, but I want to sort of segue that idea into guardrails for list building. You sort of touched on it. You mentioned errors and things like that, but how important is it to sort of know the, you know, the local meta, as it were, and then build some rules around that to make sure that the game is in fact, you know, fun for everyone. Of course, we'll cite the infamous Savannah Master Swarm. You know, if you're playing some sort of objective based mission where it's like, you know, take and hold this thing and you have 400 Savannah Masters on the board, it's not going to be very hard. Right. So, you know, yep. how do we do that, but also not like over govern and take away some creativity? That's the question.
So, yeah, the most common thing, and what you'll see at, you know, Nova or Southern Assault or anything that I run, or even other local tournaments that I've attended, most everyone follows the rule of two. Rule of two being you cannot, or for battle mechs specifically, you can't have 2 battle mechs of the same variant in your list. You can have 2 Timberwolves, but one has to be a prime and one has to be an A. Or something similar. Infantry or vehicles, you can take 2 of the same, but no more than 2. In addition, you start to see unit-specific restrictions come into play. I've seen artillery restrictions is one that I'm a big fan of. You could have no more than 2 tubes in your list. So whether you have 2 units with artillery 1 or 2 units with or 1 unit with artillery 2, exactly. As far as meta, just one of the things that I did locally, so the first couple events that I ran, everyone figured out that dashers were amazing. You know, they can move super far, they could carry battle armor and drop it off in the back lines, they were cheap, and they were more or less throwaway if you take some of the lower damage variants. When I saw every table had a dasher in its list, I immediately said, okay, from now forward, everyone gets to take battlefield support. and battlefield support, and especially in Alpha Strike, is just that's your fireball, right? I fireball that thing. I have to roll above a five. If I roll above a five, it just goes away. Get it off my table. That has actually influenced my meta. The last two tournaments that I've had, there were no dashers.
Yeah. So no, I kind of like the idea of saying, you know, like instead of saying you can't take a dasher, you said sure, take a dasher, but now this other thing is in play. Right. And I think that's kind of a neat way because you can still take a dasher if you really want, you know, but unfortunately, absolutely. Like, yeah. Right. That's pretty interesting. I don't know, Tom, a question for you, because I think this is one that's near and dear to our heart. Like we sort of play like with certain skill levels, right? So gunnery, piloting, whatever skill in Alpha Strike, what are your opinions on governing how low, meaning like how good they could be, but also how bad they can be and how important that is? Like, what are your thoughts there?
It seems to make sense. I mean, I don't see what fun benefit you get from allowing those broken, like very unrealistic piloting. I mean, if you were going to allow, like, I don't know, Dave, like if you were going to allow like a 1-1 just to say, that would be some kind of special tournament, right? Like nobody's bringing, you know, God himself to piloting a shining silvery mech. Something
right.
Like
yeah.
It's like the sword.
Yeah.
Just, you know, the I think it's interesting you said it because the points kind of prevent that from happening. It's almost the other thing.
Yeah, good luck. Yeah.
It's the other thing. Like one of the stupid things we used to do, I will still do admittedly in Alpha Strike, is take a medevac Kestrel at like, you know, well, we govern the skill levels, but you could take that thing at like skill 7 and it costs, I don't know, 8 points or something. And then you stuff
way more abusable than that. A flatbed truck at skill 5 is 1 point.
Flatbed truck spam.
Well, look, and well, what, can they drive carry
infantry? Can you stuff infantry?
No.
Let's talk about, and Dave, maybe your opinion here. We didn't really get into number of people. Like, how many is too many? How many is too few? Like, what's a really good number of people to sort of get involved in a tournament? And, you know, going out and sort of, the next thing we're going to talk about is like advertising and getting to those people. But I want to talk about, first of all, like what's a good number of people to have at a tournament, and how do you structure it?
I mean, it's preference and whatever the TO is comfortable with. There's also a matter of how many people can your venue handle. Like, do you have enough tables and terrain to set up for a large amount of people? Personally, my magic number is 16. It would be where I would cap out.
Yeah, that makes sense.
And that's purely for table and terrain.
You like, said 16?
Correct.
Right, yep. So that's 8 tables, and not to mention that makes a very neat bracket.
Yeah, I mean, obviously there are bigger tournaments out there. You know, we mentioned, you know, Nova or Southern Assault, and those Nova this year is 40. Yeah, it's really just what the TO can handle. Like I said, my venue can do 16 comfortably, plenty of space, but that's what I can handle and what I can support prize support wise, which I know opens up the next can.
Right. Right. Yeah. I mean, prize support's a big one and there are some great, you know, I mean, I'm sure as you get more reputable, you could probably get your local gaming store or others to kind of pony up and help out with that. Mm-hmm. So that, you know, or even everybody kind of pays in. Right. And you use that, you know, part of that to cover, you know, prize and things like that. So like if everybody pays $20, you know, but you have fold up tables or you got a couple buddies with fold up tables, I got, you know, a bunch of neoprene mats, like, you know, and you don't have to buy that stuff. Then, yeah, you can use that money and get, you know, some nice prizes and things like that. So,
mm-hmm. Yeah. And are you casual with your buddies on a Saturday afternoon and you're just playing for bragging rights? Great. You know, have right. somebody, you know, build up a silly trophy and pass it around in your group. It's,
can we talk about 3D printing trophies, or is that going to be is that going to add controversy? Anyway,
it's a king crab. Right, actually,
can we talk about this Kestrel real quick?
Yeah, absolutely.
All right, so you're it's got IT
3.5.
It's this mash ability that I think translates into more infantry transport. I got to go to the book and look it up. But I think it's the mash ability. You Google it.
I am.
While he's Googling, Tom, I wanna jump into the sort of the last question, because you're an expert here. Getting the word out. So let's assume you're not playing with your buddies. Let's assume you're actually trying to, you know, you're playing at your local gaming store or even at a place like PAX. I guess they kind of advertise on their own, but like, let's say local gaming store. What are some avenues you would use to advertise this? Like, where do you think you would go to get the word out to the local community for, like, a, let's say, an Alpha Strike tournament?
I mean, for me, it would be Facebook, because I'm old.
You're a boomer.
And then it would be, I'm a boomer. And then it would be the store itself. Like, my local comic shop, Johnny Destructo's, they do a really good job of organizing, like, the free play. Like, they have D&D nights. They don't do Battletech, but they do D&D.
Yeah.
And they do some other games. And you rely on them to tell their customers and the people they know that are interested in playing.
Yeah.
So then it would be Facebook. And, like, I don't like it at all, but Reddit is very popular. I don't touch Reddit with a stick at all. So
a digital stick.
Yeah, but I mean, I think it's really good. I think people really like Reddit. Discord servers, it's the same thing.
Mm-hmm.
Like, the intention is that, like, when people sign up, they sort of federate it out to their groups, you know, be the hope anyway.
Yeah. Like, my idea was basically to have a bunch of maybe, like, you know, business cards and then fly a drone through, like, the 40K tournament and just, like, airdrop propaganda all over their battlefields.
Yeah.
Is that not acceptable?
I think, to be fair,
there are a lot of 40K converts to Battletech.
It's true. We got to keep them coming. They love the fact that they can actually play a game with less than 4,000 models. It's an exciting concept.
Or dollars.
Yeah.
Sick burn, Games Workshop.
Like,
Dave, did you find the mash ability?
I did. So mash allows it to accommodate infantry transport up to half of its mash value.
Okay, so it basically gets IT 4.5.
Correct. You think it adds on top?
What's a foot platoon? Or I'm sorry, a jump platoon.
Jump platoon carry 32. So are you conventional?
Yeah, like just these guys. Okay. So it can carry one jump platoon then.
One jump platoon.
Okay. Yep. Maybe it's the Karnov that can carry two, and that's one. But even still, right? Like, this thing is only 11 points, and that's its skill 4. If we made it skill 7, and I know we're kind of jumping around here, but if I made this thing skill 7, it's 8 points for a flying, dude, the thing moves half the table, 24 freaking inches.
Yep.
For 8 points. And then you put, correct, like, jump, like, flamer infantry in it, and they just drop and, like, cook a mech. I don't know. So anyway, the point is this, guys. When you make a tournament, the moral of the story is organize it well, communicate well, think about the missions. You can feel free to steal our DFA symmetrical missions, or you could look at, like, some of the others, like Nova, right? 16 players, but if not, that's okay. Dave says 16 is the magic number. I tend to agree. I think that's a great number.
For me,
now,
it's a magic number.
Aaron,
for me.
A question for you, just bringing that up. Like, so, you know, outside of artillery, would you say that's a good example where you would even have that explicitly listed, like, no mash?
I would say your skill levels have to be within, you know, 2 to 5, right? Or something along those lines. You know,
So,
I mean, you can still get the Kestrel pretty cheap, but, you know, if they get shot out of the sky, they get shot out of the sky. It's a thing you have to worry about. I mean, but that's just, I don't know.
So I'll restrict, you can have up to 2 skill 2s and up to 2 skill 7s. And for a 3 to 6, no restrictions.
Okay. I would probably do 2 2s and 2 5s, to be quite honest.
Sure.
But
yeah.
And also, you know, the other good thing that I loved was your rule of 2 from, like, so if I did the Kestrels, I could only take 2 of them, right?
Right.
You know, and I could only take 2 flamer jump platoons, right?
Correct.
I think that's a great idea as well. We should probably implement that in our local list building, but we're going to get into our next segment, all right? And this next segment is, Tom, one of your favorite, and Dave, one that you've been waiting for, Trivia Tech. Okay? Are you guys ready for Trivia Tech?
They're getting gypped.
Very. Let's do it.
All right. So I got some really, really good ones here.
Keep my hands in view so I won't Google anything.
Right. Hands above the table. All right. So question number one. The Mechtian Enslaver is... The Mechtian Enslaver is a computer virus that allows hackers to gain control of a battle mech's central computer. A pirate group from the Stranta Mechti system known for capturing and selling slaves. C, a parasite that infects insects, driving the host to kill itself. Or C, one of the many models of a C3 slave computer available in the Inner Sphere. A Mechtian enslaver. Tom, what do you think?
It's got to be A.
The computer virus that allows hackers to gain control of a battle mech central computer. Got it. Dave, what do you think?
So obvious. It's probably...
I also want to go with A.
It is actually C, a parasite that infects insects, driving the host to kill itself. It's a hilarious thing. You should look it up on Sarna. Yeah. Absolutely bizarre. Absolutely bizarre. It's like one of those when I read it, I was like, oh my God, yeah. Tom's going to love this. It's like one of those zombie parasites that like basically takes over its host brain. I don't know why it
is
drives
it real,
the insect
though?
To kill
I've never
itself.
Heard of it.
I mean, it's real in BattleTech. So
yeah. Obviously. Yeah, I mean, there are ones.
Is this from the Far Country book? Like, this sounds pretty out there.
Second question. The Black Lions Cooperative is a secret society of politicians within the Free Worlds League that sought to unseat Thomas Marrick. B, an elite mercenary force that mysteriously vanished in 2966 during a Draconis Combine raid on Lions. C, a fighting stable on Solaris 7 notable for being a cooperative of mech warriors rather than having one owner. Or D, a flotilla of merchant vessels turned pirate after being ambushed by the Sirkinis Federation. The Black Lions Cooperative.
C.
A fighting stable on Solaris. All right. Dave, what do you think?
I mean, I still just... I'm just going to match Tom. That seems to be the way to
win. No, don't do it. You got to pick something else. I always lose.
I don't know at all, but I really like D.
The flotilla of merchant vessels?
Cool. Yeah, it just sounds super cool to me. I know. Sounds like pirates and, you know, high seas.
I was thinking A or C. That was my guess, but I went C.
Well, it is in fact C, a fighting stable on Solaris 7, although I too like the idea of merchants that just kind of go bananas after being ambushed and become pirates. But it is in fact a fighting stable on Solaris 7. That is.
I think
Black
we should
Lions
both get that point since I...
You both get the point. You talked them out of C. Okay. You both get the point. Yeah. All right. This one is hilarious. Which of these is not a real house in BattleTech? A, House Andrews. B, House Baxter. C, House Earwig. D, House Salazar. Which one is not a real house?
E, Marrick. No, I'm kidding. A.
Earwig is the obvious answer, so that means it can't be. So if Tom goes A, I'm going B.
You're going Baxter. Well, in fact, it is House Salazar. Andrews, Baxter, and Earwig are all real houses. Dave, you did not fall for my for my trick. I saw House Earwig. I was like, oh, this one's too good.
Yeah, no, it's too silly, but it has to be real.
Salazar. I know. I'm going to make a House Salazar, like a custom unit. Tom, you should do that as your painting.
They all talk with like a snake lisp. Salazar.
They talk in parcel tongue or whatever the heck it's
called. Cobra.
Yeah,
it's Cobra.
Yeah, it's Cobra. Exactly.
Oh, like wow. It. Cobra Commander. He's got like the big. So good.
Yeah,
all right.
Paint all the faceplates chrome.
It's perfect.
I love it.
All right. So listen, we're going to get into our last segment here. It is the Render Blender. Okay.
Ooh.
So today we're doing a very special render blender, the smallest of renders that can be blended. It is the flea, Tom. It is the flea.
Oh,
all right.
Love it.
All right, so I'm going to go full screen on this guy. There she blows. All right.
Wow.
And we got three little renders to go through. So let's talk about the flea. What comes to mind here when you see this beauty?
It's great. Like, this is a really cool design. They put the cab of like a big rig, you know, like a semi truck or like some kind of work vehicle, just on top of a set of legs, and mounted two giant guns to it. It's really cool. The legs are cool. I like the pistony things in the lower, like, yeah, those very cool. I don't know what they are, but I like them.
They're coilovers.
Ooh, yeah.
They just have a protective casing around them.
Yeah, the articulated feet. They look like they could have those roller skate shoes, you know, like they could have rollers underneath them.
Oh my God, cool. What are they called? My kids
like a
had
teenager.
Them.
Yeah.
Heelys.
Oh my God, Dave, you win.
Yeah. The flea's got a set of Heelys on. I love it. Yeah.
So good.
Can we get the second picture? Yeah. Very cool. I like how like narrow it is, you know? It's very cool. It looks like you could, like, if you were in a chase with the police, you know, it'd be the car that gets through that thin alley, and then, like, I don't know, what would a police mech be? Like
an urban mech.
The urban mech just smashes into the wall, you know, gets stuck. So very cool. It's all legs. I love it. Yeah, look at that. It's so funny.
I mean, it's true to form. What
it looks like a chicken
tons?
Or something.
Yeah.
Yeah.
It's just a little 20 tonner, you know.
But how fast? I mean, it just looks fast, though. Like, the legs are so long compared to the rest of the body that it looks like it's made to be pretty quick.
I'm going to go back to Sarna. So it is, where's max speed? Yeah, it's 97, so it's a 6.9, but it does jump to 119, or which I think is a 12 with mask.
Yeah. No, that's not super fast. Not like clan fast, but it's pretty
fast. It's really not, because a Locust hits 120 kph without a mask. Okay.
Without a mask, yeah. So
yeah.
Interesting.
You get 130 down below if you get into some of the variants.
Some of the later era ones, yeah, where they swap the engine out, yeah.
You get pretty good armaments too, though. I mean, like, not to get off topic of the render itself, but it's a pretty sweet mech.
What's it got? Two mediums and a small, or what's it packing?
Standard is two medium pulse, two small, and a flamer.
Oh wow,
flamer! Yeah,
two medium pulse. God, that's a lot of tonnage. That's like 30% of its tonnage dedicated to weapons or something. I like these little ones. I think they're kind of neat. And I do really like, Tom, everything you called out. I also love the detail on the leg, like not just the pistons, but the little inset here, the actuators here, these stupid little things, whatever they are, right? Like, there's tons of detail to paint in here. Like, if you want to just add a little silver, or, you know, when you dry brush, like the things that'll get picked up with the highlighting. So I do appreciate all of that stuff as well. But yeah, it's a cool mech.
Super cool. Yeah, I like it.
All right.
A plus.
Yeah, it's a cool one. I'm excited to get my hands on all these mechs, hopefully soon. But that said, we're going to wrap this one up. So a couple of things before we do. If you're looking to get your hands on anything BattleTech related, you can head on over to Ares Games and Minis. That is my number one stop for all things BattleTech. You know, the minis, the dice, the books, the novels, box sets, the games, all of the things. They do have some excellent print on demand. They have 3D printed terrain from some terrific vendors like Thunderhead Studios, and so on and so forth. So great stuff over there at Ares Games and Minis. Also, if you want to support the channel, subscribe, like, leave a comment, let us know what you think about the flea, let us know what you think about tournaments, if you've run one, if you're interested in running one. I'm curious to know how many of you guys actually organize stuff out there or participate in them. And if you play Classic or Alpha Strike, or whatever you do, when you get involved in your tournaments, would love to hear all about your tournament experiences. Additionally, if you want to get involved further, you can head on over to Patreon. It's as little as $1 a month. It gets you in on the action, all the behind the scenes stuff. You know, what's going on at the channel. We give at least a monthly update, if not more. So again, a little as a dollar a month, and that helps to keep all the lights on and the cameras rolling. That said, that's all I got. So guys, thank you so much for watching. Enjoy your Sunday. And of course, stay tuned. Always great stuff coming from Death From Above Wargaming. Have a good one.